I'm Mitchell Moss, and this is Menswear Musings. Today, I'm chatting all things Pitti Woma 109 with two guests. One is my friend Joshua Davis, who owns and operates the luxury acquisition company Monogram. The other is Marc Roger, who runs the newsletter A Fabricaturalist on Substack, on which he makes commentary, reviews, and analysis on all things fashion. We talk about the reasons we go to Pitti Woma, the trends we did and did not notice, and share our favorite non-Pitti-related rituals for whenever we go to Florence. Let's get into it.
Thanks so much for coming on, guys. This is great. We just came back from Pitti 109. It's been 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks now. And last summer, Joshua, you and I got together to kind of go through our thing, through our experience at that Pitti. And we had also gone to Naples at that time. And so I thought it'd be fun to do that again. And this time add Mark, because Mark, your experience and point of view is different. I'm just fascinated to hear kind of your thing. Also, you're kind of a big deal on Substack. So I feel like there's a lot of overlap between our audiences that would be interesting to hear about. So first, I just want to say thanks for coming on. And I think it'd be cool for you guys, each of us, to kind of talk about just briefly, what is it about Pitti that, like, why do you go there? What's the reason you go? What's your primary purpose for being there? And also, like, how long have you been going, and has that changed over time? But mainly, what's the main thing that you do? So, like, Mark, what's yours?
I have been going actually for quite a while, and went several times before I even started posting online. So it was just out of curiosity. I was good friends with a local independent retailer, and I just asked to join because I wanted to see what's new, what's next, and learn a little bit more.
Okay, so you were working in a retail environment before?
No, not at all. It was just a friend that I had who owned the shop.
Gotcha.
My background is entirely different. So that's when I went, I think, for the first time, like, roughly a decade ago.
Well, okay.
Maybe a little bit longer. But that was sort of the first time that I got in touch with that entire world and found it generally interesting. And as much as people say it has changed, it also hasn't. But I think we're going to touch on this later on in this podcast.
Yes, we do have a question that we want to talk about. Actually, let me rewind. I wanted to ask you, for the sake of everybody who maybe hasn't heard of you before, you have a Substack called Fabricaturalist.
Yes.
And but that's not your primary, like, job. You have a full-time job. Can you share what that is? Like, what is your day work? And then, like, what's your Substack about?
That is a great question. So it's shifting towards, like, this whole thing is becoming my day job, essentially, like a mixture of between the Substack, the content, the brand reviews, but also running my own brand as well as a production management company where we help brands to launch their own stuff or put things into production where they couldn't find the right manufacturer for. So yeah. An amalgamation of everything that's sort of related and draws back to menswear, essentially.
Okay. You mentioned your own company, or because you're launching a shirt and stuff like that, which we can talk about later. But, like,
yes. And if Riverside, maybe that's a nudge for the team, if anybody catches this, if they had a function where the backgrounds could be in video, then we would have a wonderful ad running in the background. I edited all of this with some photos from us from Pitti, but here we are with a regular.
That's not your real bookshelf? You're telling me that's not your real bookshelf?
I almost tricked you, didn't I?
Cool. Okay. So you go to Pitti now to do what? Because you mentioned at first it was like you were disinterested, but I'm sorry if I missed what your current reason for going is.
Currently, it's primarily to get in touch with brands, talk with them about, like, what they're doing next, and seeing also what's going to be relevant just in the grand scheme of trends and where things are going, because you get a better impression of what's relevant at these, quote-unquote, I would say, smaller shows than, let's say, Milan Fashion Week. Like, as big of a deal as Pitti Uomo is, it is still a very condensed experience and a very buyer-heavy trade show compared to the big media circus that happens at, like, the global fashion weeks.
Right. That's hilarious that you say that, because a lot of people think of Pitti as the media circus. But That's interesting. I want to come back to that talking about later when we talk about like if pity has changed and stuff. That's one of the questions I want to get to later. But I was curious then. I wanted to hear Joshua, your take, because you are a luxury acquisition for high net worth individuals. So you're all about making relationships with, you know, companies, I would assume. But in terms of like going to Pity Uomo, what's your sort of like what's the point for you? Why do you even go there?
I honestly have no idea. To drink a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. Free Negronis.
The bistecca is awfully good in Florence. I think I go for two reasons. You know, I wonder when I book this ticket every year if it's worth going again.
I think
that Mark did a good job. We were hanging out after Pity, and he mentioned that like Milan fashion, the fashion weeks in general are like laboratories for creation and evolution fashion. And that's great. At Pity, you see a cross-section of adoption. And since I'm trying to buy for, you know, real people wearing real clothes, and I made the distinction because a lot of fashion, especially this little feels like cosplay, right?
Totally.
So I am looking for what people are wearing, not the jewel-encrusted influencers trying to catch the camera lens. Right. But like, at its whole, can I, you know, deduce some common denominators and what people are typically buying? So it's sort of like a trend forecasting, I guess, for my clients to make sure that I know that I'm buying correctly. I also do a fair bit of talking to the individual booths to see what their sell-through is like, because what the buyers are buying is supposed to be merchandise on the store's floor. And if I can help my clients stay ahead of the curve a little bit, then they just feel a little better about that. And on the other hand, it is a lot of access, because for a lot of pieces that you see at the show, they don't necessarily get purchased by every store. So you don't, even if you're in a retailer that has purchased from this brand, you don't see that piece from the collection in this store. So you see more of it. And then if you can get to know the brands at a corporate level, access just becomes a lot easier across the board.
Does that help you? You're not ordering anything. Obviously you don't own a retail operation or anything like that, but like, are you really literally like, hey, who bought this? Asking like, this piece is cool. Who's going to have this? Or are you able to even like gain a little bit more access than that and just say, you know, can I order this directly from you? Or are you going to have this? Like,
yeah, it's both ends. Like I'll ask for, you know, who's their stock is for certain items, and they'll usually divert me to like that, you know, the area manager for that region. But also something's really cool. Like, I have plenty of clients who authorize me to like buy in bulk, because in general, if the MOQ is low enough and your markup is, you know,
what does MOQ mean?
Minimum order quantity.
Oh,
if it's
MOQ,
low enough, then I can, and if the standard retail markup is, you know, 2.7 to 3.2, somewhere in that range, then I don't have to buy that many pieces if you want several to come in cheaper than just buying at retail, right? So I can buy 10 pieces cheaper than I can buy 4 pieces at retail. And if you love the thing, I can have it customized for you, then the value prop is definitely there to just buy in bulk anyway.
That's so cool. I guess my follow-up question that would be like, were you talking about the same item in the same color, or you'd have a little bit of flexibility in that?
That's very much brand dependent. We went to a pant brand where we thought, you know, MOQ was 10, and like that sounded great because I love the jean, but like they mandated that you have like the same thread, the same fabric, same button on all 10.
Yeah.
That's not super interesting. But if they're making their own things, same pair of pants, but you know, 10 different stitch colors, 10 different buttons, now we have a super access point because I'm buying 10 unique items at wholesale for the client. That's a great value prop.
That is. That's super cool. How about, because Pity is one thing, but then you did go to Milan. You guys both went to Milan Fashion Week, right?
Briefly.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Okay. Afternoon, I think.
Okay. Did you make it to any of the things like Cuccinelli or anything like that? Or that was just kind of your passing through to eat the pasta and then?
We did go to Cuccinelli, yeah. It's probably the worst example of going to Fashion Week after going to Pity, because they're one of the few brands that kind of just packs up their entire Pity collection and then like dumps it on Milan. Most brands show a much larger collection in Milan.
Because they're committed to Pity. They're committed to Pity and its different vibe and its accessible atmosphere. And
it exists because of them still.
That's what I've heard. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I've heard. Interesting. Okay, so you guys didn't really go. So what did you go to Milan for then? Because you guys both travel together, right? You were going together for
we went
Milan
for the
Unico
pasta
was the next week.
Yes,
just the pasta.
just the pasta.
Well, it was funny because I was watching last winter at some point, or I don't know, in the last several months, I was watching Stanley Tucci's Italy show on, is it Netflix or Prime or whatever that is, and HBO. And in episode 2, they go to Milan. And I was like, I know that guy. I know that guy. It was a chef. And I pulled up my photo, my videos from the Cucinelli event of either last winter or last summer. And it was the video of him. And he was like, there was a huge thing of pasta. And he was just like, his eyes were crazy. He was like, you know. Anyway, so did you get the pasta?
It was No, they pulled out. They ran out right before we got there.
Oh, man. Did you at least get a free Negroni?
So I had to check out the actual collection of clothing instead of the pasta.
Did you see anybody
cool
there?
The rest of the food was good, though.
There were, last time there was like a Chinese super megastar that there was like a bunch of Chinese people just blocking the road. And it was hard to get in last time. Do you remember that, Joshua?
I do remember that. Yeah, we didn't. So Cucinelli moved their timing for the Ralph Lauren presentation. So the whole day was kind of wonky.
Are you guys, okay, this is cool. Sorry, the Ralph Lauren thing was huge this year. Is that like new? Did they
it's the first time in like 10 years they've done it.
Really? Because was it just that it was a runway show that was different? Because I feel like they've always had something at Milan Fashion Week, or at least the last couple of
times. But
also
the combination of polo and like the purple label, putting everything together and then showing in Milan. So it was just the consolidation that attracted more people.
I definitely want to go to that if I can get an invite. I don't know how I get an invite. But just yesterday, I got a notification that VP of Design at Ralph Lauren followed me on Instagram. And if he's listening to
Let's hope he's listening.
I was impressed. I was like, now.
One of the 30 VPs of Design at Ralph Lauren followed you. That's excellent.
Well, that's the thing is, I don't know much about Ralph Lauren's inner workings and if that's a meaningful. You know what I mean? I thought it was meaningful. Anyway, let's see. What's his name? Let me find it. Hold on. I've just gotten so many followers recently. It's just hard to find.
In the meantime, why are you going to Pitti, Mitchell?
I go to Pitti. Thank you for asking. I go because I inevitably, kind of like you, make connections with brands that end up resulting in some kind of business for me as an influencer, basically, or a website content creator. And so I could be significantly more probably intentional about that. So far, I've told Joshua in the past, I don't think strategically about relationships. That doesn't come second nature to me. So when I'm there, I'm going to just like talking to people and then think kind of almost two thirds of the way through a conversation like, hey, by the way, maybe we could do something, you know? And so many times it's like the people that I meet there and then I end up like either down the road or we DM or sometimes on the spot, we like make plans to do some kind of collaboration where I can promote their brand and stuff like that. So that's not however, it's split. I will say this, it's split between that and also just creating content for menswear enthusiasts like myself. So I'm kind of split between those two worlds because normal influencer world is like you just get money from brands to promote their stuff. And I do that a little bit, but I also have this Patreon and Substack because I'm just because I am a glutton for punishment to create content twice. But there, I like the structure of that because that makes it clear who you're serving. Your money, your financial incentive is from your readers. And so if you're going to do a brand review or something like that, there's at no point in your brain are you like, or it just makes that decision easier. Like, should I say something negative or should I not? And so for that, it's like creating content for them. So like this podcast, for instance, there's a free version and then there's going to be a paid full length version for those subscribers. And I could share that with your subscribers too, Mark, since you're on here as well. If they're interested in listening to the full version of this podcast. So I'll share that with you guys. So anyway, it's like you, Joshua, I'm always like, every time I'm like, should I go? And this time was the most that way. We have a new baby at home. And so I ended up not coming to Milan because, I just didn't want to be away from the home from home too long. So I came home on Friday, but going there, I made some connections. Like I always do. I always have two or three conversations with people that make it worth my while. Yeah. But next time, I got to get invited to that Ralph Lauren thing, man.
I got to get on the Milan Fashion Week circle. Next up is Zegna. Then you squeeze in, I think, Brioni. They're not doing a runway show, but at least a nice showroom presentation.
Dunhill was nice, too.
Dunhill, yes. Dunhill, last year, I think in the summer when you guys were out in Milan, they had quite the...
Yep.
There's like a lot of... There's several menswear influencer dudes that were just like hyping up Dunhill. And I don't know if that's a coordinated... It's hard for me to know if it's like a coordinated marketing campaign on their part.
If it happens at the same time from multiple people, it's always a commit.
That's kind of how I approach it. Or I would assume it, but then like, because I don't know anything about Dunhill, you know, I have no history with that brand, but several people were like, this is my favorite brand ever. And they're even more on fire now because of whoever returned or something. I don't know. But I'm interested to learn. So, hey, if the Dunhill people are listening, invite me. I'll be part of that campaign. Okie doke. It's Christopher Torres. Anyway, that was the Ralph Lauren guy.
VP at Raleigh.
VP of design. Okay, so I wanted to ask you guys, street style wise, because you guys both talked about what people are wearing, and that's a good reason to go to Pitti. I think that's interesting. It was funny. Did you see the Hodinkee article about watches? The photo report. So obviously, what's his name? Thousand Yard Style, Rob Spangle, always takes photos for Hodinkee of watches and stuff. And I always love that because that's a sort of a separate insight into the people of Pitti Uomo, because we're all kind of in this industry. We see these people. We kind of become used to it. And then you see the comments on Hodinkee, and it kind of is like a reality check of like, and one of the comments was like, this is becoming like, I think they compared to Comic-Con or something like that. Pitti is becoming like Comic-Con with the amount of cosplay going on. And as I was swiping through his photos, I was like, it kind of looks that way because of the people that he photographed. Some of them, it was just close up. So he snapped a photo of my watch. I was wearing my Speedmaster, but he didn't get my overall fit. My overall fit was like pretty tame by Pitti standards, right? It was like a turtleneck and like a wax jacket and a scarf. Like, you know what I mean? But then his photos were like, whoa, this is crazy. So do you feel like you say it is kind of like cosplay, but like, is that the norm that you're seeing on the street there?
I think the difference is between what you see online and what you see on the streets. What you see online is like extrapolated, the people who pose for photos and dress to be photographed, versus when you're inside of any of the halls or when you leave the show and go anywhere, like the buyers, they dress like regular people. Yes, they have easy access and you're going to see maybe some cool pieces here and there, but they would never be photographed. And I think that applies also to at least more than half of the attendees at Pitti. Like, they're there to work. They're not there to get a picture taken.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like the photographers, I mean, those images self-select, right?
That, yes.
You wouldn't snap it if it weren't bizarre. Like, they're almost there to catch the bizarre.
Yeah.
Like, I never get photographed. And I don't really want to. I'm trying to go to a meeting. And, like, they're snapping a runway. And I'm like, okay, but I'm on a phone call. Like, that's fine. Leave me alone.
Now, that said, Joshua, do you, I'm curious, both of you, actually. But, no, Joshua, I do feel like, you own nice clothes. So you do turn out a little bit more than you maybe would in day-to-day life, I assume, right?
A little bit.
Not that you're trying to be photographed, but there's a, like, you know, it's like you put on something special for date night, but going to Pitti, I would think that, okay, I'm gonna bring the big guns, you know.
I didn't know, like, I left the biggest guns here because, like, I didn't want the hassle of traveling with them, to be honest.
And by biggest
thank
guns,
goodness
you mean,
it
like,
snowed and you had a chance to get your cost per wear in for the
Vicuña. That's right, that's right. Yeah.
I've worn it like twice.
Mark, what about you? You're not you're just there to like talk to people. You're trying to fly under the radar, right?
Yes. I obviously enjoy clothing and have plenty of stuff that would lend itself for a Pitti image, but it's not why I go there. And I leave this to the people who are just better looking and more photogenic than I am. Why compete on that basis?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I dress accordingly, like for every business and other trade show events, but not to have my picture taken and land on Instagram.
So, Trent, like crazy people aside, like the peacocks that they've been called before, because like you said, let me lend my voice real quick to this discussion. I want to move on with it. But I do street style photography. That's one of the things that I do for my Patreon and Substack subscribers. Like what I take photos of is behind the paywall for them. I actively avoid taking pictures of those crazy people. Actively avoid. If I see a crazy person, I'm like mad. Get out of my way. I want to take a photo of somebody interesting. And so I'm always trying to look for more classically styled, actually wearable
stuff. But interesting to you is shaped by that conference, right? Like,
totally.
Because yeah, you're in that microcosm, like yes. You need that level of interesting has to push the bar even further. So like the camo has to be a dead stock original. Like the purple sweater has to be very purple, right? Like something about that fit has to be unique.
You're referencing my Thursday outfit. I did wear something to try and be photographed, actually. That was one of my goals. And I'm wearing those camo pants right now, actually. But you're right. Within the context of Pity, it has to stand out somehow. That said, it really is hard to... Well, there's two things working against you. Number one is just like the speed. People are walking... If you're trying to legit just do people as they're walking into the show, that's hard because they're in a crowd sometimes and you don't have much time, and analyzing an outfit top to bottom and making that split second decision, like yes or no to take a photo of it. Sometimes I'll be taking photos and I'll get I'll be like, oh man, I'm just getting, this is great. I'm getting so many. And I review them later. I'm like, what did I like about this guy's outfit? So yes, there is like an art to dressing for Pity where it's, to me, I think, and what I tried to embody this time is like, okay, I would wear this every day, and I'm adding one thing that's like maybe a little bit extra eye-catching. Mm-hmm. So for me, like I wore a tan turtleneck and an olive green like jungle jacket, you know, water repellent with, I think I was wearing just dark rinsed denim that day. Okay, so that's like not going to get photographed. That's like actually a fairly boring outfit. So I added like a colorful scarf.
By Pity standards, huh? It's a good outfit, but by Pity standards, it's just not interesting enough.
Correct. In my day-to-day life, it would be fine. I wouldn't worry about it. And it'd be, most people would see me and be like, oh, cool, he's put together. But yeah, by Pity standards, it's just like the background noise.
Right, and that's a risk factor for me. Because if I'm there shopping on behalf of clients and my clients want to wear things that are luxurious but wearable, and I get photographed wearing something that's like bizarre, I lose credibility. So there is a detriment for me to dressing in a way that is photographable there.
So ideally, you want to be photographed, but by the photographers who are looking for the classic, iconic, or, you know, not classic necessarily, but, you know, who have that eye for those details and know what they're looking for.
Even that self-selects, because, I mean, you always make friends with photographers because they photograph people that they know and like.
True.
So you'll see the same bubble of people from every photographer every single year because they know those people and they look for them. Sure if you saw Simon Crompton walk in, if you didn't know who he was, you wouldn't snap the photo. I mean, yes, right. it's a lovely bespoke fit, but like it's not visibly noteworthy in Pity standards. But
yeah,
you say, there's Simon, I'm going to snap it.
That's a good point, because actually there's times when I've watched when Simon's come to Pity and I've thought, oh, he's trying to get photographed, and maybe he wasn't. But it was just noticeably outside, like, his typical wheelhouse, you know, if you follow him. And then this time, I didn't feel like he did that at all. I feel like he was just, like, wearing an awesome Glenn Plaid flannel suit that just fit him really well, you know? And I will say one last thing, too, about the photography is that there's certain of those Asian guys. There's, like, Japanese dudes. There's that one guy with the huge head for his body. You know what I'm talking about? He's very small, but his head is, like, anyway. You know what I'm talking about? The guys that Derek Guy's always posting about. I see those guys every time. I usually photograph them. And this time I was like, meh, I don't need to take his photo. Because it's like a perfect proportional bespoke looking fit, you know, and actually, but the way he worded it, it actually didn't call to me. So I guess it's a judgment call of what's just slightly interesting to add a little bit of variety. And I guess if you were going to think about it in the marketing world, like maybe those are what we're talking about is sort of like top of funnel versus bottom of funnel.
Because if you get dressed every single day, like, I feel like I wear tailored clothing, a sport coat most days. Sport coat, open collar shirt, pants of some kind, nice dress shoes every day. And it's not like 10 years ago, I was like, I can't imagine how I would have thought if I would have seen my wardrobe of today 10 years ago. I would have thought, whoa, I can't believe it. I can't believe that someday I'll have all that stuff and be able to dress that way. And now it's sort of, it's old hat. It's like, it's boring to me. So the bottom of funnel is the guy who's like, okay, well, how do I like do something that's a little bit, just keep it a little bit more interesting. So that's part, that is how I would define the way I'm looking at that kind of stuff now, being at that point. So that said, ignoring the people who are attention seekers and crazy or whatever, what is, are some trends that you noticed overall? It could be stuff that you saw the companies showing, or trends of what people were wearing that you noticed.
I made a video about this yesterday, so I'll start with that one. What I noticed was...
I hope you've enjoyed this preview. To hear the full conversation, join my Patreon at patreon.com/menswearmusings. As a member, you also get other exclusive content, including advice, brand reviews, outfit inspo, and more. Thanks again for your support. We'll see you next time.